Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, my friends. Up today on What's Bugging Me. The multi-billion dollar belly flop of Silicon Valley Bank. How worried should you be? And what are the real causes? Ed Butowski joins me and says the Fed will go ahead and raise interest rates by half a percentage point and damn the torpedoes of the bank failures. But veteran options trader Jim Maiorio will be on the call. He says the Fed is the real villain in the Silicon Valley bank collapse.
If they would just stop helping, I think things would be a lot better.
And the same thing could be said for almost every aspect of government, come to think of it. And here we go. Wait for it. Hey guys, great to see you. Before starting my rant, I want to ask you, please watch the video interviews from this podcast, What's Bugging Me, on the Ricochet channel on YouTube and subscribe to it, will you? It'll brighten your day and enlighten your mind and change your life. So here's what's bugging me right now. We just averted a banking crisis. So why are so many people so upset about it? I'm talking about that big belly flop of Silicon Valley Bank, for 40 years, the pillar lender to startups. Something like half of all tech firms had their accounts there. 2,500 VC firms at Silicon Valley Bank. And then last week, it suddenly stumbles. It falls from grace. And by Sunday night, the takeover of Signature Bank, a second bank in New York, a big crypto lender, had happened. So various people are spinning this to their own benefit and misrepresenting the facts of the case and spinning it in ways that are manipulative or just plain wrong. This bank backstop, or bailout if you want to call it that, is being politicized by crazy by both sides of the political aisle. And it bugs me because this is bad for the markets, it's bad for the economy, and it's bad for confidence in our banking system, which is actually in great shape. A quick explainer of what happened here, okay? So for weeks, there have been rumors in Silicon Valley, emails exchanged, worries about the health of Silicon Valley Bank. And because if the Silicon Valley Bank has a problem, then all of these companies have a problem. They can't meet payroll. Now, VC funding fell off a cliff in the fourth quarter. It fell 60% from the huge levels of the fourth quarter in 2021. And this is because the Federal Reserve was raising interest rates like crazy so it could slow down the economy and so it could kind of press down inflation, which was roaring up for the first time in 20 or 30 years, right? So the venture funding drives up. The tech startups start taking more of their cash out of Silicon Valley Bank to fund operations. And so the bank then has to sell some bonds, government-backed, safe securities, treasuries, long-term, 2 years, 10 years. They got to sell some of that to start handing out more cash to these companies that aren't getting any more venture money from their venture firms. So they got to rely on the cash they've got. And that's where this rupture happened. Last Wednesday, Silicon Valley Bank comes out and shocks Wall Street by saying, hey, we lost almost $2 billion on these bonds. These are government bonds. They had invested in 10-year government bonds that only paid, let's say, 1.5%. But when the Fed suddenly, within a matter of months, has interest rates, new bonds, paying 5% instead of 2.5%, twice as much, then that old bond that can't adjust its interest rate, its price falls, and now it's worth only half as much as it was because you can get new money today invested to get twice the interest. So that's what happened here. The bank had to sell. It lost $2 billion. Now, that's only 1% of total assets at the bank. This would have been survivable. But the bank handled the announcement badly. It buried the news of the loss in a press release about raising another $2 billion. $2.5 billion, and its stock then after hours on Wednesday night plummeted 60%. Okay. And this sent hundreds of Silicon Valley Bank customers looking to pull their money out and move it elsewhere. They're afraid that, you know, of a modern day run on the bank. And that's just what happened. Now, that's where I fault depositors and VC firms and tech firms. They should be loyal to this bank. And instead, they had no belief in it. They pulled out $42 billion in cash in 2 days. It's 20% of SVB's total assets. SVB. It sounds like an STD. And a lot of banks couldn't survive a run like that. 20% of your assets taken out in a couple days. And then the stocks of the other regional banks, they start falling. First Republic, Signature, PacWest. 20, 30, 40% falling on the same fears because, my gosh, if Silicon Valley Bank is sick, might these other banks be sick? Might they have bought these bonds and then got outflanked by the Fed's moves? And so suddenly their banks would be worth less half what they were because the Fed was raising rates so high and so fast. So everyone feared this bank run might spread. And this is why the government stepped in on Sunday night. And it said, you know what? If you had cash at that bank, even if it's over the $250,000 limit that we usually guarantee, we the FDIC, if you had cash at that bank, we're going to make you whole. It's all right. And instantly, that mere guarantee was enough to quell the panic. It was the right thing to do. If the FDIC had not stepped in, then depositors may have run on more regional banks that aren't in Silicon Valley, that don't even have the same pressures at all, but those banks own the same underwater bonds. There's $600 billion in underwater bonds across all U.S. banks right now. Now, that's not a huge percentage of the trillions of dollars in assets. I think it's maybe almost $20 trillion in bank assets. So $600 billion is survivable, and they don't have to take the losses because they don't have to sell the bonds. You could hold them till they mature, and then you take no losses because you get the full money back. It's just that Silicon Valley Bank needed cash because people started drawing their money out, so they had to sell at a loss. So this was the right thing to do, this bailout, this backstop, but we're already in an election year, like it or not. We're in 2024, and the battle lines are being drawn for this backstop program. And odd bedfellows are climbing in the sack together. Nikki Haley is against the bailout, and she's a Republican presidential candidate. Another Republican wannabe agrees with that stance, Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek is this attractive, articulate, intellectual entrepreneur. He's 37 years old. He wants to run for president for the Republican nomination. He's getting pushed like crazy by the Wall Street Journal editorial board and Fox News. Both of those are Rupert Murdoch properties, and they believe in ABT, anybody but Trump. So those Republicans are against this bank backstop. Meanwhile, the most liberal and ridiculous senators of all, Elizabeth Warren, she is on the war path. Get it? War path? Native American. This odious bank-hating senator from Massachusetts who self-identifies as Native American, even though she isn't. Isn't it weird? In our country, you are allowed to change your sex just by saying so, but you don't dare try to rewrite your race or ethnic background. You don't dare identify as something you weren't born as. Homie, don't play that. It's not allowed. Pocahontas, and I love it when Trump calls her that, appeared on MSNBC the other day with Rachel Maddow, thus forcing viewers to watch two of the most smug, irritating, know-it-all liberals on earth. So Senator Warren appeared on Monday, and just one day after the Feds had seized control of Signature Bank, you know, and they'd already taken control of SVB. And it would be a little early for a senator to decide that she knew everything there was to know about what just happened. But Elizabeth Warren, she knows, because she has sung this same old tune for 20 years. Big banks bad. So here's what the sanctimonious senator had to say about where the real fault lies. And I do mean lies.
Those bank CEOs who lobbied hard to get this change in the law. Those are the ones who, when the window opened, wow, were they ready to go. And they went out and they decided to load up on risk. And why? They loaded up on risk because it made their banks more profitable. And that meant it made them have higher salaries. They got to rule over bigger banks. They got big bonuses. They brought in their friends. And they did all that by taking on more risk. And it worked. SVB increased its profitability over the last 3 years by 40%. They took on all that risk, made themselves more profitable right up to the day that the bank exploded.
Okay, so first, Senator Warren has no idea what the real problem at Silicon Valley Bank was. The bank lost $1.8 billion last week investing in government bonds. It wasn't high risk. They weren't going to Vegas. It was supposed to be safe. And it was rendered unsafe by two main things. First of all, the way the bank's people managed that risk. They didn't hedge it. They didn't do something to offset it in case it went down. Their fault. But second, the Fed raised interest rates probably at the highest, fastest pace in history. And that rendered these banks, these bonds suddenly worth half as much as they were overnight almost. And that is the Fed's fault. But Elizabeth Warren doesn't care about the facts. She has her narrative. Government good, banks bad. Trump deregulation had nothing to do with this. What is it with the Democrats and always have to blame everything on Donald Trump? The chemical train derails in Ohio and they blame it on deregulation of the rails under Trump. And then it turns out to be an overheated ball bearing. They want to blame the bank flop on Trump, when really they should be blaming a number of other parties. Deregulation had nothing to do with it. So Lizzie Pocahontas Warren wants to investigate the banks and impose more regulation. But another Massachusetts liberal senator says Elizabeth Warren is wrong. The former Senator Barney Frank, the doppelganger and dead ringer for comedian Buddy Hackett. He joined with Senator Warren over a decade ago to sponsor reforms to stop bank failures from happening. Dodd-Frank, it was called. He was the Frank in Dodd-Frank. Now, two big banks have failed. The second and third largest bank failures ever. This is after Washington Mutual back in the last meltdown. So Dodd-Frank didn't work, right? It didn't serve the purpose of preventing bailouts. So what does Senator Warren want to do? It's like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland in these old movies in the 40s. You know, let's put on a show. In this case, it's let's pass more regulations and blame the banks and demonize them. Meanwhile, you got icons of Silicon Valley breaking beer bottles for a bar fight because of this bailout. That's one of the better B alliterative sentences I've ever come up with. Kara Swisher is a whip-smart journalist and an ultra-liberal podcaster, and a member of the Silicon Valley Digirati. She's very, very much watched and respected. David Sachs is the basso profundo conservative PayPal billionaire, and he raised urgent concerns about the possibility of a broader meltdown, trying to kind of, you know, goad the government into acting as soon as possible. Now, this brought a vicious attack on David Sachs from Kara Swisher. She put out a tweet bashing David Sachs for overhyping the crisis. Kara Swisher basically saying, quote, the government was working without muss or fuss, only the mussy and fussy screaming memes. That's what she's calling David Sachs here. Only the mussy and fussy screaming memes made it worse by the pointless, overly dramatic, and painfully performative, and the Oscar goes to, narrative that it was all chaos, panic. And she says, panic sure ain't pretty. Now, David Sachs, conservative billionaire, counters Kara Swisher with this tweet, quote, a hateful media will make me whatever they need me to be in order to keep their attack machine going for another day. And both of these people actually support the bailout or backstop. In fact, Kara Swisher told CNBC's Brian Sully Sullivan, this isn't a bailout at all.
It's not very complicated. It's certainly not a bailout. You know, the government makes all kinds of loans to companies all the time. I mean, the one I'm thinking of is called Tesla. Tesla wouldn't have survived without the government loan. And there's been bad loans and good loans. And in this case, it calmed the waters, which needed to happen.
Now, I have been all over this story this week. I have talked to a very senior official at one of the biggest banks in the world and wealth managers who oversee billions of dollars in other people's money and floor traders and Wall Street lawyers. And so here's my take on what you can believe and what you should dismiss as bull spit. First up, this crisis is all but over. Props to the Biden administration and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. I had my doubts about her. She's an academic rather than a business person. But they moved in swiftly to stop this bleeding, and it worked. So far, anyway. So you don't have to worry about a meltdown like in 2008-09. I covered that one in a front row seat at CNBC. And this one is far less serious, far less of a threat. You know, that last meltdown in 08, it had banks interlinked with trillions in leverage bets back and forth on fake stuff like credit default swaps and CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, and synthetic investments. It was craziness. In the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, it was investing in government-backed, supposedly safe securities. There's a big difference. Second, critics are calling this another bank bailout like in 08, and ain't so. That last one bailed out the biggest banks in the world because the entire financial system was at risk. It was ugly but necessary. This new action is different. The banks that screwed up are dead, chopped up into pieces, and put up for sale. They aren't being bailed out. Their shareholders aren't being bailed out. Instead, it is the depositors who just got government support. Thousands of startups and tech people, venture funds, 2,500 venture funds there, and the government support won't cost taxpayers a dime. First off, we made a profit on the bailout of 2008. In this program, any losses, they would be minimal, and they're going to be covered by a Fed fund that's made up of bank fees, not taxpayers. Now a third point, go woke, go broke. That's what some conservatives are saying now, blaming Silicon Valley Bank's collapse on the fact that it was too woke, playing up diversity and inclusion and ignoring risk controls. Now, if you've listened to What's Bugging Me, you know I want to pick up this ball and run with it. I am a doubter of the whole woke, so dumb agenda. I've talked here previously about the false issue of white supremacy and the exaggeration of supposed hate crimes. But here, I got to say, no, the woke agenda isn't the reason for the failure of SVB. Silicon Valley Bank is too woke for shareholders' own good. That's true. But this meltdown happened because its executives were inept at risk management. They were inept at hedging their bets, even though those bets were on safe government securities. And that brings me to a fourth point. Yes, Silicon Valley Bank is at fault. And at the same time, the Federal Reserve's crazy policy on raising rates too high and too fast is what put this bank and other banks in trouble. A new bond that pays 5% makes an old bond that pays only 2.5% suddenly worth half of what it was before. And like I said at the top, U.S. banks have more than $600 billion now in these underwater bonds. They don't have to take losses, though, if they don't have to sell them. And Silicon Valley Bank had to sell them because of their run on the bank. And now a fifth and final point. Silicon Valley Bank is a great property. Where the hell is Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan Chase or Warren Buffett or Bank of America? Why haven't any of the giant, too-big-to-fail banks stepped up to acquire SVB? Well, let's think about that. Back in the great meltdown of 08, Jamie Dimon and Chase stepped up and bought Bear Stearns and bought the consumer business of Washington Mutual, the biggest bank failure right up into this record. And then along came number two, SVB, and the number third largest bank failure, Signature. So they stepped up and helped out. And they felt like, Jamie Dimon later said, he felt like it was the patriotic thing to do to help his country survive this banking crisis back in 2008. And he was rewarded for this by getting a public flogging by Senator Warren and other demagogue politicians. And now Senator Warren and her cronies are itching to do it all over again. No good deed goes unpunished, so this time the big banks are letting this good deed pass them by. while the customers of Silicon Valley Bank twist in the wind. When we come back, I got two veteran money men on the implications of this bank backstop or bailout, and what will the Fed do next? Jim Iorio and Ed Butowski will fire away.
I am Andrew Gutman.
And I'm Beth Feely, and we're a couple of accidental activist parents who woke up and started speaking out about issues that we saw in our children's schools.
So join us every week on Take Back Our Schools on the Ricochet Audio Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.
All right, let's talk more about the collapse, the belly flop of Silicon Valley Bank with two real veteran market watchers and kind of money guys. We've got Jim Iorio. He is a longtime trader at the CBOT, right? And he was doing a lot of trading just today in the wake of a lot of this stuff. He is the host of the Futures Edge podcast. That's part of TJM, where Jim Iorio works. Also, Ed Butowski. He's joined us several times before, and he's with Chapwood Investments out there, and he's going to give us the investor eye on what all this goes on. So, all right. So in the opening days after the Sunday dramatic intervention by the FDIC and the Treasury, it looks like contagion fears are being quelled. It looks like we are past the worst, or are we? Jim Iorio, given your pulse on the markets, tell us what you're seeing and what happened today.
So I think we're all kind of, we have shell shock and PTSD from back what we saw in 2007, and we expect things like this to be systemic. What was different in 2007? One, they all had the same trade on. Two, they were all intertwined and with different lines of credit and trades with each other. So they all had the potential to pull each other down. This was just Bob Stein from First Trust, one of the economists there, described this as not systemic, but symptomatic. So the problem is it's individual to these banks, but there will be more that didn't hedge their long-term bond risk, and it's going to show up, which, by the way, this is so frustrating to a guy like me. Call me. I will explain to you how to do a 10-year put spread, and you could have been hedged on this. Yes, it would have cost money, but it's cheaper than going bankrupt. But I think
Jim,
this
is banks, do banks typically, even big banks, regional banks, do they typically hedge on something as safe, supposedly, as government securities?
Absolutely they do. We've been doing it. That's part of the business that drives what I do, you know, and I trade my own book and I have clients that are banks and hedge funds, and we've done a tremendous amount of hedging of bond books from banks. Now, I don't know this thing about where you put them in this corral that says hold to maturity and then you don't have to worry about them and mark to market. I'm not sure if banks hedge that portfolio. They don't tell me which ones they are, but that seems like a scam to me that's coming to roost right now.
Yeah, well, actually, SVB itself had a $15 billion decline in hold to maturity and its assets, which was almost the $16 billion equity in the bank itself. It's just that if you could have held those bonds to maturity, they would have paid out. All right, they're not keeping up with the market, but they're not going bankrupt. It's because depositors did a run on the bank and they pulled out $42 billion. Ed Butowski, let's cut to you from the investor angle. Did you hear from clients through this weekend? How worried were you when you saw what was going on?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was not that worried. My clients, I got a lot of text messages, a lot of emails, you know, related to it, you know, wondering what was happening. But I knew that this was very isolated to Silicon Valley Bank. It did surprise me on Sunday when Signature Bank was closed. So that started to scare me a little bit that there was maybe some sort of systemic issue going on here. But if you really think about it, this was just isolated at Silicon Valley Bank. Now, I will throw out there that if we do see a 50 basis point rise in the Fed funds rate next week, I think you're going to start to see a few more regional banks, you know, start to show, you know, their wares, if you want to call it that, and probably see a couple of more stress tests that are going to be done. And maybe a couple more banks are going to be closed because, you know, if Silicon Valley Bank did this, there's got to be others that are of that size that maybe didn't hedge themselves that well and certainly didn't manage things properly. But when it comes to my standpoint, I was not that concerned about this.
Right. Okay. You know, hey, Jim, what do you think if the Fed goes another 50 basis points with their next rise, that is going to spook the market, and that could put more strain on it and create a whole new stress. Or no, if we think the Silicon Valley thing's isolated, then it doesn't have to.
Well, the market now says there's a 0% chance of them going 50 basis points. I think there's a 0% chance of them going 50 basis points. I think it would be absolutely asinine. Here's the thing that bothers me about this whole thing is that we knew as the Fed was raising rates above what's considered the neutral rate. We don't know what the neutral rate is, but we know it's lower than what it is right now. They were trying to break something, to break demand at the very least. So why are we all surprised when we see the break happening? I don't know if you read my Substack from over the weekend. I said, this is the classic Warren Buffett saying, when the tide goes out, you see who's, you know, wearing swim trunks. And if you've ever been to a naked beach, that can be a very, very unpleasant sight oftentimes. So that's what we're seeing right now is sometimes this is what happens. You see who's strong and who's weak, who hedged and who didn't. And this is what's happening.
Well, I'll tell you, I got to throw out, Jim, that I actually believe that we're going to see, you know, a 50 basis point rise. And the reason I say that is that this is an isolated situation with Silicon Valley Bank, and the Fed has a responsibility for the entire country and to bring inflation down. And I think that inflation is still rampant, and they have to take measures to slow inflation down. And I, you know, regardless of the Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank situation, I think they have a bigger responsibility, and that is bringing inflation down for the country. And the only way they can do that is through raising interest rates. And I believe 50 bips is in the cards.
You know, I hope you're wrong, Ed Butowski, because think of this. Already, this shock to the system has instantly made fraidy cats of some of the boldest, most risk-taking people in our economy. So a lot of people out there are saying that instantly, I think this has a deflationary effect, that the jolt to confidence and the worrying about this is itself going to help do that, number one. And number two, I feel like the Fed operates with utter impunity. It's as if the, you know, Powell at the Fed is driving a huge garbage truck down Main Street in a small town, running over stop signs and through red lights, not having any idea of the damage it's doing. I mean, the Fed did a hockey stick of rate rises, probably one of the fastest in history of any major developed country ever. It was artificial instead of easy. The very fact they had to do that much means they were late to the party. It caused a lot of this turmoil happening now. And the thought that they'll just come in the very next meeting a week later and say, let's raise another 50, would show them to be so tone deaf. Help me out here, Jimmy I.
So here's what I'm going to bolster Ed's argument before I tell you what that I disagree is that they clearly missed the signs of inflation a year and a half ago, June of 2021, when CPI had already printed over 5%, the housing market was parabolic, and they just kept loose for another couple months and bought $250 billion of mortgage-backed bonds after that. He cannot risk his legacy by letting inflation start higher again, to Ed's point. And I appreciate, and I think Ed's point is reasonable. I just disagree. I think we've seen this play out before, that they talk tough until they start to feel the cracks in the ice under their feet. And right. Then all of a sudden they cave. My money says that's where they cave. I bet that way is because that's what Fed funds tells me.
Well, look, we'll put a steak dinner on this. If
you better believe
I'm buying steak dinners for both of you. If you guys are wrong, you're buying me
there's
two
no
steak
way.
Dinners.
In fact, the Fed will go 25, I'll bet. But they really should do zero and say, you know, we're just going to wait a minute and see what goes on here. One thing that a guy on this Twitter call I did with 16,000 people, and I later heard from him, he's clearly a very veteran finance guy, and he was saying all Silicon Valley Bank would have had to do when the run on the bank rumor started is go right to the Fed discount window, and you do it secretly, although it'll leak. You get money, they'll do it against your underwater bonds at par to give you enough money so that you can cover deposits. This is part of what the Treasury and the FDIC announced when they came out on a Sunday or two ago to talk about this, and that Silicon Valley Bank could have done it then. Do you think that any of the regional banks guys will be doing this? Dare they? Ed, start there.
Well, I think whoever that person was spot on. I mean, you know, I'm not a banking expert, but I believe that, you know, and I've heard from others that they could have, you know, absolutely avoided all of this by just going to the discount window and getting, you know, additional funds to shore up their balance sheet. And do I think others are going to do it? I think the ones that have stress in their in their balance sheet, which a lot of them are taking a really hard look at it right now, just like look at Credit Suisse right now coming out and saying how they're, you know, feeling the stress of, you know, higher rates. So I think that you're probably going to see a couple more regional banks ahead and do this. You know, I can't tell you who they are, nor could Jim, because we don't know the balance sheets, but I would suspect that there will be additional
First Republic, of course, down 60%, Jim, and then back up another 35%, kind of a little bit of a bungee jump there. The bad thing, though, is it's always so much easier to destroy value, and it's so much harder to come back up. If your stock drops 50%, it has to go back up 100% to get back to break even from where it was. Now, Jim, the volatility isn't over. Tell us about the trading day you just came off of the CBOT, the Chicago Board of Trade, from, and how much of volume of what you did versus what you do daily, usually.
It's unbelievable what we've seen over the last, call it, 4 days in trading, because what 90% of what we trade for our clients is short-term interest rates. They were called Eurodollars, now they're called SOFR. So the very thing that's moving drastically right now is the very thing that we trade. And so we probably are operating at 4x, 5x of our normal volumes today. I think we did about $500 billion notional today off our desk, probably even more than that. It's pretty staggering. And what it is that people have been putting on trades, and they have on these big positions, hedge funds around the world. And then all of a sudden something changes, and they have to rush to the exits at the same time. And no matter what markets are, we trade in one of the most liquid markets in the world. So it's not as liquid when you're trying to get out in a panic as it is when you're trying to get into a trade at your own leisure. So it's...
And you saw this happen in the days after the move by the feds? Oh, you saw this happen?
No question about it. Yeah, people, you know, there's been... that's what a lot of people... lose a lot of money. I mean, there's a big bifurcation. Some people have the right position, some people have the wrong position on. And when there's a move like this, it exacerbates huge the positions on they're losing. Now, that being said, most of the banks around the world don't have the same sort of speculative positions on in rate futures that they did prior to the great financial crisis. And that's probably a good thing ultimately. So a lot of these are more hedge funds that are doing that, which I think, is probably better for the average guy, considering that it'll be less bank failures. But to Ed's point, you had asked a question about the discount window too, and about the stigma. I'm surprised by two things. You mentioned Credit Suisse. I'm surprised they're still in business after all the bad headlines they seem to get every year. And two, I'm surprised there's still a stigma of the discount window, considering 14 short years ago, basically every bank in the whole country failed. I mean, we know you are not the pillars of strength that you would claim to be forever. To me, it seems like you should shore yourself up.
You know what, Ed Butowski, this has surprised me, is that in 08, 09, that was a bailout of banks and hence bank shareholders and bank executives. This backstop, which they prefer to call it, wasn't bailing out the bank at all. It was going to depositors who did nothing more wrong than simply putting their cash with a top 20 strong bank that was putting it into government securities, right?
Yep, that's all it was. And, you know, so that seems so benign. But when you look at how sharply interest rates have gone higher, you can understand why they had such a big loss. You know, they lost $1.8 billion. And, you know, as Jim said, they could have gone to the discount window very quietly and borrowed that money just like they did back in, 2008, 2009. Why they weren't allowed to do that is suspect. You know, you look at the FDIC of California. And they're the ones that really started this shutdown of the bank. And then Janet Yellen came in and just said, "Hey, you're done." But you know, to some degree, it's somewhat unfair. I have a friend of mine who works at Silicon Valley Bank, and he ran the Austin office and had 8 of the banks go up to him. But he wasn't involved with the banking part; he was involved with the technology side.
Yeah.
And he was very surprised about how this thing came down. It was a shock to everybody at the bank as well.
I want to ask you both about the next two things here. Let me say it so if I forget, you remind me: woke and step up. First, on the woke thing, I regret that this gets so politicized instantly. People are so bitter about it on each side. You know, it's a bailout for your friends in Silicon Valley. I really think they did a good thing to save thousands of startups and innovation just with a simple little guarantee. It's not going to cost us a dime. But some people are saying that the bank was so woke, their chief risk officer is this gorgeous woman of color who's LGBTQ and who talked a lot about that in her profiles and how proud she is and blah, blah, blah. And they're saying they took their eye off the ball because of that. I feel like that's kind of an unfair view because, frankly, this woman, or whatever she wants to call herself, oversaw hundreds of people in charge of risk. And I'm sure veterans in that department who had been there for many years, and the CEO who the previous Tuesday was answering questions about what he likes to do in his free time. He likes cycling. And so I don't think the woke thing is a factor. What do you say, Jim Iorio?
No, I think it is so romantic a notion to pull us people in. I'm talking about myself, who think the diversity and all and the ESG is all a bunch of crap. I think it is so nice and so attractive for us to say this is what happened. But I agree with you. I don't think until proven otherwise. And I'll still make jokes about it privately as if this is what caused it. But I'm wrong in doing that. And that just displays a weakness in my character.
Ed?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I looked at the board of directors, and that's a group that is questionable. You have one person there with banking experience, and you have a lot of other people who are politicians and a winemaker. You even have a venture capitalist on it who, I looked at his quality or his portfolio companies, and he presented that 75 to 80% of his companies were from minority-owned or ethnic groups. That started those companies. There is a little bit of a wokeness to their board of directors.
Now, you know what? And let's think about this. First of all, if you are Silicon Valley Bank, you're doing business with everyone in Silicon Valley, one of the most ultra-liberal woke places. And so you've got to speak their language, number one. Number two, I'm not sure. Am I wrong about this, guys? Am I naive? I don't think it's the responsibility of the board of directors that meets once a quarter to manage risk. And yet it is their responsibility to kind of, from a very high level, help market the bank, help sell, help its public image. I'm sure its representation is really a good thing for the bank in other ways. This is the fault of the people inside the bank who are the pros who run it. They're the ones who blew it, I think. But now...
Oh, no, yeah, no, I you go ahead.
I don't disagree with you. It's just interesting to look at Silicon Valley Bank and look at the board, because ultimately, if you take a board position, you're responsible for the bank. And you have to take that seriously. And no matter, if you're there for marketing or not, but, you have to start
out. They did pick those guys instead of picking really hardcore bankers who have run some of the world's largest banks. That's true. And now let's go to the second element, stepping up. I had a much smarter guy than I am point this out to me in a call this morning. Where the hell is JP Morgan Chase and Jamie Dimon? Where the hell are the big banks? Why have they not stepped up to bail out and buy Silicon Valley Bank? And the guy reminds me, back in 08, 09, Jamie Dimon stepped up. They bought one of the failed banks, were willing to rescue it and absorb it. And what reward did he get for that? He had Elizabeth Warren, the senator, give him a public beating in Washington in congressional hearings as if they had done something wrong. They were utterly ungrateful in Washington. And now you get the feeling that maybe some of the big banks are saying, you know what? Screw you. Not going for it this time.
I hope that that's the case. And I remember when a couple times when Jamie Dimon was testifying in front of Congress, and he just was like, stop, this is, your question is stupid. And he became my hero then. And I genuinely hope that's the case, because they have to be tired of taking the beatings that they have. And, perhaps they just don't see value there. Everyone was in a panic back in 07, 08. And I'm sure there were some sweetheart under the table deals that we didn't even know about to fuel those banks' desire to pick up other banks too. And those just don't exist now because we're not in the same situation.
Well, if you look at Silicon Valley Bank, to buy it, basically, you're looking at about a $2 or $3 billion loss before you had a run on the bank. I don't know how much of a risk there would be to buy Silicon Valley Bank.
It's very little risk. And I wish Elon Musk, can you hear me, Lonnie, baby? I wish Elon Musk would step up. I really think that it boils down to about the $2 billion that they lost on the bond thing. Once they can get the depositors back, What do you say, Jim?
I like that notion a lot. I'm pretty sure Elon Musk's not going to do it. He seems to have his hands full with a lot of other things right now. But, you know, I'll consider writing a check for it. Yeah, you might be right.
A bunch of private equity shops that are focused on banking. I mean, you know, anybody who really takes and dives into it will realize that now that they've backstopped all of the depositors, a lot of those deposits are not leaving there. And there's probably a great value. I mean, think about it. They doubled their number of deposits in the last year. I mean, this is an incredible franchise.
This is venture capital investors' money going from through the VC firms. It was like this long money machine taking out golden crumbs at every turn and then ending up there and then going into safe government securities, which are no longer safe. I realize it was the bank's fault and the way they managed it, but the entire challenge was presented because of the Fed's own erratic policy after, 8 years or 10 years of zero interest rates, roughly.
Amen.
And then going up, and it amounts to a 20-fold increase in borrowing costs when you go from 0.25% to 5 or 5.5%. My gosh.
You hit it right in the head there. The Fed, you know, keeping rates inorganically low for as long as they have. It's like, to me, it's like they're running the merry-go-round and they keep it unnecessarily slow for the first half of the ride while everybody gets comfortable and then hit the gear and swing it at 3 times the normal speed and knock everybody off. If they would just stop helping, I think things would be a lot better.
Ed?
I think one of the other issues with Silicon Valley Bank is that they invested some of their money in their companies that they loaned money to. So I think they bought some of the bonds and they were direct investors in some of their companies, and the companies weren't going public and there was liquidity issues there. So right. I think there's a little bit more than just the treasuries, but no matter what, it has everything to do with higher rates. Because higher rates, precluded a lot of these companies from going public and getting exits.
Yeah, we're getting ready to make a final lap here. And I want to say one thing that bothers me, and I've talked about this in previous episodes of what's bugging me. You know, the federal government will help create a huge problem, and then it will turn around, will blame the business that got crushed by the federal government. Here, the Abbott Laboratories plant making infant formula that provided 60% of the supply in the U.S., there's a little virus outbreak or something, and they shut down the plant entirely when that virus wasn't even at the plant at all. And now they're doing an investigation of Abbott and the factory for why they messed up. Here we've got the Federal Reserve does the hockey stick on rates. It creates these ripple effects of these problems everywhere. But Congress is going to investigate what the banks did wrong, with nobody questioning what the Fed did wrong. Jim, go ahead.
So just 6 months ago, in the same week, the federal government talked about a bill that would not allow fossil fuel companies to access credit markets. And then in the same weeks, called the big oil companies, say, hey, guys, why aren't you pumping more oil? I think it was about 8 months ago. So to show how dysfunctional their regulatory, I don't know if they don't understand what the regulations do and then they turn around and blame them, or I don't know just if it's nefarious. It just is maddening to me.
Or if they just don't care, Ed Butowski.
They just don't care.
Well, I would say that in this case, the blame belongs to Silicon Valley Bank because they mismanaged their assets. And they knew that the Fed fund, that the Federal Reserve was going to raise rates. I mean, you don't fight the Fed, and the direction of the Fed. And so everybody knew that they were going to raise rates. And I think in this case, this doesn't fall back on the government, although the government, signaled everything, but Silicon Valley Bank did not manage their risk properly.
Well said. This is indeed, I agree with you on that. As much as I would like to blame the Fed, the fact is, it is the fault. It starts with the bank itself and with their lack of risk management and betting way too far on the long term at the absolutely worst time and not hedging that. So, well, thank you very much for being with us, Ed Butowski. Another great performance. Thanks also to Jim Iorio. And we'll be right back after this.
This is Stephen Hayward of the Powerline blog and the Powerline show on Ricochet, inviting you to tune in each weekend to our 3 Whiskey Happy Hour, where John, you and I, along with the pseudonymous Lucretia, Powerline's international woman of mystery, break down the week's top stories and continue our long-running arguments about first principles. and also critique the best whiskeys available in the world. That's Powerline's 3 Whiskey Happy Hour, hosted by Ricochet, and found on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
We're back, and I really appreciate your taking the time to sit in for episode 15 of What's Bugging Me. Without all of you, my voice is a tree falling in the forest. And would it really make a sound? Oh, I've always thought, of course it makes a sound. I never got that, really. But anyway, please love us and give us your highest rating wherever you listen to this pod, and sign up for the Ricochet channel on YouTube. See why I have a face made for radio and how my guests are always better looking than I am. And now for today's parting shot. Don't panic. That was a running joke long ago in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They even had a don't panic button instead of a panic button. Now, it turns out that your unconscious mind is unable to comprehend the words don't and not. Instead, your unconscious mind sees only the word panic. When President Nixon said, "I am not a crook," all of America heard him say the opposite. "I am a crook." When drivers see a billboard that says, "Don't drive drunk," their unconscious minds see, "Drive drunk." So my advice to you on the recent bank failure fears is, instead of don't panic, avoid panic. When things go crazy, the investor in you must go calm. Studies show the less you do, investing-wise, in a crisis, the better off you end up in your portfolio. In fact, overall, the less you trade and the fewer changes you make, the higher your returns. This has been proven over and over again. A good investing account is maybe 5% churn in a year. Everything else remains in place. If you are under age 55, you can worry a lot less about a situation like this one we're in now. You have 20 or 30 years to make up any market crash. So just keep on saving and investing gradually and conservatively. It used to be 60% stocks, 40% bonds, but young people should be doing 75% stocks and maybe 20% bonds and 5% gold, or maybe even 1% Bitcoin. And this is in your retirement account. That's the best I can figure. And of course, any decisions you make are on you, as they say. But you should know that always, eventually, the stock market comes back. 98% of the time in the past 200 years, in any given 10-year period, stocks finished higher 10 years later than where they started. 98% of the time. I have watched this play out for 35 years covering business and the markets. And I mean, I covered the 1987 crash, a little bit of it for the Wall Street Journal, and the tech wreck in 2000 for Forbes, and the meltdown of 2008 at CNBC. In the crash of 87, my mom was a school teacher with $45,000 in her IRA, and she panicked and sold one-third of everything she had. She lost $15,000 back then, and stocks came back. Now, that $15,000 in 1987 would be worth more than $500,000 today if my mom had just left it alone in the S&P 500 index of the 500 biggest, strongest companies. And that extra $500,000 would probably, I'm guessing, double what she has today at age 85. In the meltdown of 08, everyone on television was saying, "We're toast. Wall Street is over. It will never have the earnings it once had." And all of it was poppycock. A bunch of Eeyore nonsense. Woe is me. When you watch cable news, keep in mind that a lot of people don't know much more than what they read in the prompter. They are afraid to be bold or optimistic because they are afraid of being wrong. I've never been afraid of being wrong. So these people err on the side of doom. Just at the time when you should remain calm and avoid panic. In the shocking collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, we saw how fast fear can be fanned by social media. Think about it. Silicon Valley is home to some of the boldest risk takers in the world. And in a matter of days, they turned into frightened Bambis running for their lives and trying to take their money with them. Now, new fears are competing for attention. Credit Suisse just revealed accounting weaknesses, and rather than reward the bank for candor and honesty, traders are turning fraidy cat and fretting over European banks. Let them be the ones to worry about that, and recall the meltdown of 08, which is one of the few times I've been truly afraid. At one point, all of us on CNBC were looking for the next landmine. Everyone on Wall Street was crying, "The sky is falling," because of Greece. And Greece never was big enough to hurt the global economy in any way. But it was a thing. It was the next thing to worry about back then. One last thought. This cycle of fear and panic we are seeing right now on banks, it could have a good effect, oddly enough. This is because the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank jolted the confidence and cockiness of the U.S. economy, and it devastated the confidence of the wealth creators in Silicon Valley in particular. Now, this may have a deflationary effect and slow down the growth that the Fed keeps trying to restrain so as to fight price inflation. And this would mean that the Fed has to stop raising interest rates and maybe start cutting them by year end. And that will ease any pressure on banks that held those underwater bonds. And that in turn would ease the fear and panic about the stability of the banks. It's like what Warren Buffett says, when all others are fearful, you should get greedy. Take a deep breath and know that things will be okay. Thanks for listening. Like me, really like me on Ricochet and Spotify and Apple. And have a glorious day, guys.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.